I think it would not be fitting for me to recognize the University of Oklahoma, the impact that it had on me, the people there. This was obviously, I told the team earlier, toughest decision of my life to come here. And it's those people there were tremendous to me. And so thank you. I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for my time here. That's one of the best college football programs in the country and has been forever and will continue to be. So very thankful for my time here.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. I'm very thankful for the $110 million that I'm about to step into. I'm very thankful for the unlimited use of the private jet 24/7 for family. All of this was brought to you by the 5 years I spent at Oklahoma, also making several million dollars a year. That was a really nice, sincere moment by Lincoln Riley. And I just don't care.
Why are you the way that you are?
I get it, yeah. Right? It was the toughest decision you've ever made.
It probably is. I mean,
people have had to put down animals
I'm talking about him.
Like, people have to decide whether to pull the plug on relatives, and his decision was, I'm going to make $8 million over here, and I'm going to make $11 million over here.
It's the context of professionally what they've been a part of in Norman and doing this to the players at this time, the relationships with the organizations, with the program and the school's administration. I can see it being a challenge.
It's very challenging. Yeah. I mean, we should all be so lucky. Listen, to have.
The day is going to come. I'm not going to finish my life on this station. Mm-hmm. The day is going to come.
Somebody's going to offer you $111 million.
Where one of us is going to be offered more money or a better situation or better management.
Win, Lord.
Support. Like, the time is going to come that me and you will split. And this is my heritage station. It would be a challenge to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that the other situation isn't worth leaving for.
So that was Lincoln Riley talking about his decision.
I'm trying to be serious with you when you pull up right now.
It's just tough to hear somebody get emotional. Guys, I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss everything, the pastures. I'm going to miss those people who are related in a really weird way, like, you know, sister brothers and all that kind of stuff.
Now you're going too far.
I'm going to really miss those. And,
you're going too far.
It's so tough to go to Los Angeles and $110 million to go ahead and get the perspective on this, by the way, and to get the perspective on the level of this move. I love the hire. I really do. I just think it's just so weird to hear anybody get emotional about having to go make $110 million. I can't fathom that.
Did you get emotional when you left Clemson? Cleveland?
No.
You didn't get emotional when you left Cleveland?
Not on air.
You had not on air. Were you emotional?
Not in front of microphones. That's not the point.
Oh,
the point is, we're going to talk with, you know him from Afternoon Drive on ESPN LA. You also know him from Kaplan and Crew on 1090 in San Diego. He's also the founder of the Sided Debates app. We're going to have a Carolina Panthers one out there that you guys can check out at Nick Wilson Says. If you haven't downloaded that app already, do it. He is Scott Kaplan. Scott, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to talk about the $110 million man.
Nick and Stan, what's up? Hey, Stan, I'm with you, man. I think Nick is, I don't think he's giving us, you know, I think he's kind of not really understanding the emotion of leaving a team, dude. I know, listen, it's a lot of money. They bought his house in Oklahoma. They bought his new house in Oklahoma. They paid him more money than they needed to pay to buy those houses. But they bought him so that they could hurry up and get him out to L.A. and get him to start running this USC football program. And all this stuff happens so fast, and you're just getting done with the emotion of the Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game, and you have to make this split decision. And granted, Nick, I got it, dude. It's $110 million, and it's use of a private jet, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm telling you, man, when you're leaving your team, when you're leaving what has been your school, it is kind of an emotional, hard thing to do. I kind of was buying those tears, dude.
Thank you, Scott.
Every time I've left a job, I've been like Magic Johnson leaving the Lakers. I'm not going to be there.
You are so full of it.
I got to know, though, what has the reaction been to the Lincoln Riley hire in Los Angeles?
Well, you got to understand how L.A. fans think. And L.A. fans think that they are entitled to championships at every level in every sport. So this year, for example, I mean, everybody expects LeBron James and the Lakers to get it together and still win an NBA title. for some reason, everybody still thinks that the Rams are going to play in the Super Bowl in their home stadium. And now the immediate reaction is, wow, USC has finally joined the big leagues of college football where they can compete for a coach of this magnitude, put their money where their mouth is, say this is the way they do it at Alabama or this is the way they do it at Clemson. And I'm telling you, like, people were on the radio yesterday saying, watch USC, they'll win a national championship or they'll get to the playoff within the first 2-3 years of Lincoln Riley, because so many of his Southern California recruits, kids that wanted to be the next Kyler Murray or the next Jalen Hurts that were committed to Oklahoma to play for Lincoln Riley, those kids have decommitted, and now all of a sudden they want to come play for him at SC. So typical LA fans' immediate reaction is, here comes the championship.
How does USC and California, right? We know we had this conversation when Chip Kelly got over there to UCLA. How far has USC football fallen in the pecking order of Braun in LA and Dodgers winning it and all of that? Where is it compared to where it was? And do you think Kingsbury has the potential to get it back to where Pete had it?
You know, it's such a great question, because it really, USC football was for so many years under Pete Carroll, it was the NFL team of LA. You know, people loved the Lakers and the Dodgers, and USC football was right there. And then the NFL moved back into town, and the Rams built a $5 billion stadium, and they came home. So the Rams moved up in the pecking order. But USC football this year was so bad, guys. I mean, the Coliseum can hold like 90,000 people, and there were sparse, I mean really sparse crowds. And people weren't talking about SC football. I mean, the most we talked about SC football this year is when they fired Clay Helton after the second game of the season when they lost to Stanford. Otherwise, the rest of the season went very, very quietly. Even with the team losing, with a quarterback controversy, with an interim head coach, with a search for a head coach, USC football was off the radar of the LA sports scene this past year. So getting a guy like Lincoln Riley, who I think the brilliance of the hire wasn't just his success at Oklahoma. The brilliance of it was he was gainfully employed. No one was talking about him. They were talking about Luke Fickell from Cincinnati, because the athletic director at USC, Mike Bone, was recently at Cincinnati. So the assumption was it would be a Luke Fickell. Then you had a guy like Carson Palmer, say Mike Tomlin, or you had a guy like somebody on ESPN, I'm trying to remember who it was, said something about Brian Kelly. And so the fact that nobody was talking about this hire was really, and it being so under the radar, was really the brilliance of it. And immediately, like I said, people look at his resume and they see what he did at Oklahoma. They see the Heisman Trophy winners, the number one overall picks, the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. And USC fans believe USC will be back to Pac-12 dominance within the next couple of years.
Scott Kaplan, Afternoon Drive on ESPN LA. Also, Kaplan and crew on 1090 in San Diego. The man's got more jobs than Seacrest, and that's why we love him. He's also the founder of the Sided Debates podcast, or the Sided Debates app. You should download that right now. You mentioned the state of the program, but in terms of the state of the program and the talent that is already on the USC roster, what is the situation Lincoln Riley's walking into?
Well, they don't really have the base of talent that they've had in the past. You know, when Pete Carroll handed off the program to a Lane Kiffin, when Lane Kiffin handed it off to a Steve Sarkisian, I mean, these were all guys that were part of the Pete Carroll family tree. There was still talent. You know, back in the day, when Reggie Bush went to USC, Reggie Bush could have gone anywhere in the country, but he wanted to go to SC. That was the number one place to go back then. USC has lost that luster, not only because the crowds haven't been as big at the Coliseum, they just haven't produced the type of NFL talent that they have in the past. They've had competition from Oregon. They've got a great recruiting head coach up there and a guy by the name of Mario Cristobal, who's done a really great job of rating Southern California for top talent. Other schools like Oklahoma or Notre Dame or Clemson can go into Southern California and find a five-star, you know, high school quarterback. So The kids in Southern California that used to always think SC was the number one school, those kids started spreading out and going to other places around the country. So the fact of the matter is, Lincoln Riley will walk into a locker room where there's some talent remaining, but not the top-to-bottom talent that other head coaches had when they started. But I would think, this is just a guess here, but the amount of talent that Southern California, Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego produces every year in college football, I would think, and I know this is going to sound like an exaggeration, but I think USC could turn a really bad recruiting season, as it's been reported, into a top 10 recruiting class literally in a matter of a month, just because of the cachet that a guy like Lincoln Riley has with high school star football players who he was likely already recruiting to Oklahoma.
Scott, one of the things before we move off of this that I've been told by a former AD in the Power Five, and this was mostly around when NIL first cracked, and you're probably more abreast of, from a state standpoint, there was a financial component that athletic directors across California and the Pac-12 were panicking about, how do we pay these kids and all this other stuff. The financial viability of USC right now, facilities, where is this money coming from?
Well, USC has some exceptionally wealthy boosters, people who support the university, support the athletic department. And here's where the money is coming from, ultimately. When you have an athletic director who is a professional athletic director, that's what they have now in a gentleman by the name of Mike Bone. Previous to that, you guys realize the athletic director at USC was Lynn Swann.
Yeah.
Lynn Swann was a really great wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Before that, he was a great player for USC. But he was a broadcaster, and he had some business experience, but he never ran an athletic department like USC. And by the way, there's a lot more to running an athletic department than just concentrating on football. So prior to Mike Bone becoming the athletic director, Lynn Swann was there, and he was never really around. I mean, he was still busy being Lynn Swann, the former NFL star, the Hall of Famer. Prior to that, it was Pat Hayden, who also had a really good career as a quarterback at SC, but he also was a television broadcaster. So they've made the mistake along the way of hiring from within the Trojan family, but they've hired guys with names, not guys with real experience. Mike Bone is a professional athletic director, and a college athletic director's number one job is find the rich people, kiss their butts, get them to make donations, and that's how the program can actually put out the kind of money that we were talking about yesterday, because we've never heard anything like this before. And I remember when this happened, this is like 2 days ago, but I read this story that said this move will send shockwaves around college football. And I said, okay, will it? And then you see this story about Brian Kelly and LSU and $100 million contract. And you go, what USC did by raiding somebody's team, Oklahoma's no stepping stone job to USC. I would argue that it's actually a lateral move to go from Oklahoma to USC. Some people might even argue that it's taking a step backwards. But I think the way Lincoln Riley looks at it is, it's big money. It's a conference that's ripe for the taking. And to your point, your question about NIL, if you're a high school superstar player,
you
have the chance to go to Clemson, Alabama, or USC.
Right.
And you've got Hollywood and USC right here in your backyard. I mean, I just think there's a great opportunity to make a lot more money at USC than there is at my alma mater, Pitt. I mean, that's just the facts of the matter. It doesn't matter how good Pitt is or if they're playing in Charlotte in the ACC championship. What matters is Los Angeles versus Pittsburgh in this equation.
Scott, we got about 30 seconds here, buddy. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the latest with the Sided app there and what you guys have been up to.
Well, I appreciate that, Nick. You've been great to us. I would just say to everybody who's listening this afternoon, if you like arguing about sports, debating about sports, come download the Sided Debates app. It starts with a question. You give an answer in a poll. You find out the score, which side you're on, and then you take a side, and it goes back and forth. The beauty of it is, unlike on Twitter, where everybody's arguing like angrily and calling out names and just saying all kinds of nasty stuff to you, I mean, this is very focused on a particular topic. So people are a lot more civil, and the debates go back and forth, and it's really great. So people are having fun with it. it's growing like crazy, and I appreciate your support always. Thank you.
Well, hey, my guy, I am retweeting right now. The great one here, Better Hire, Brian Kelly at LSU, Lincoln Riley at USC, tweeting out that here shortly, at Nick Wilson Says. You can follow Scott at Scott Kaplan. You can also listen to him on ESPN 710 in L.A. and on Kaplan and Crew on 1090 in San Diego. Cap, we love the grind, man. Love the perspective. Always great to catch up with you, buddy.
Nick and Stan, great to be with both of you guys. And Stan, school this young man, will you?
I keep working with him daily,
Give me
Scott.
That
but
110.
Thank you for the encouragement.
Give me that money, and I will Magic Johnson peace out like you would never see. $110 million.
It's not us going to 110. It's him going from 90 to 110.
I'd still be that emotional. I still would be like, all right, guys.
90 to 110 doesn't change your lifestyle one iota. You're still eating in the same places, vacationing in the same places.
No,
your children are still going to the same school.
Different quality of eateries in L.A. versus Norman, Oklahoma. By the way, be the ninth caller right now at 704-570-9610, and you'll win a pair of tickets to the ACC championship game between Pitt and Wake this weekend in Charlotte. Good luck from Sports Radio FNZ. And by the way, great stuff with Scott Kaplan there. But we move from the big news in college football to a rough, rough game for the Charlotte Hornets. That's next on Sports Radio FNC. Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, a decaffeinated show. There's no caffeine in this building. There's no coffee in this building. You're going to notice a change in my tone over the next 2.5 hours.
That sounds like a personal problem. And you need an attitude adjustment given that bleep you just gave me and Scott Kaplan.
I'm just really sad because there's no caffeine coffee here. And
no
I really
shame
want
in a man
some.
Crying. No shame in a man shedding tears.
Shut up and take your $110 million,
That's
Lincoln
not
Riley.
The point.
In the meanwhile, in the same way that those were crocodile tears by old Lincoln Riley in Los Angeles, crocodile tears. This overreaction every time the Charlotte Hornets lose a game just is mind-boggling to me. And fans are one thing, but I knew today the second I picked up the phone. Because there's some really interesting conversations to be had about the Hornets, the Bulls. What did end up happening last night is the Bulls won 113 to 119 in Chicago. There are plenty of interesting conversations to be gleaned. But I feel like we've fallen into this trap with the Hornets. And I'm going to say we, the royal we. Mm-hmm. That when the Hornets lose, the sky is falling. And when the Hornets win, they're going to go win a championship. And the reality is, it's 23 games into the season. There's no loss that is that important to get this upset about this early in the season, Stanislav Norfleet.
No, it's I'm not upset about last night. I was upset about Saturday night at Houston. That was some bleep. And now the fact is, what's happening is this team defensively has regressed.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have Mason Plumlee in the lineup. You don't have a guy that is defensive minded. And Cody Martin in the lineup last night. Okay, going up against a very talented, very good Chicago Bull team. I wasn't upset at last night. They got beat by a team that is clearly better than them, more talented than them. Surprisingly, has as good, if not a little bit better, chemistry on the floor than the Charlotte Hornets. So last night didn't bother me, but I caught myself thinking about other tentacles from the game than just the play on the floor last night.
So I do think that Chicago is a natural team to compare yourself against because you were kind of mired in the same place in the East for a really long time.
Yeah, they stunk.
And both teams were pretty bad. Both teams were competing for the 10th and 11th spot.
Can you compete?
Yeah, they were competing with who was going to be the 10th spot in the East and who was going to be the 11th.
Go ahead, yo.
You could have been the 12th spot, all right? That was the perspective we
There's
had.
There's a huge difference between 90 and 100 million and 10 and 12.
Yeah, you're trying to go 23 and 59 every time. That's what you're trying to do here. But specific to last night, I think it's important to remember. I think the Bulls are fair to look at and say, right now, they're a better team than you are. They have been. They're higher than you in the standards. I also think
second in the East right now.
The way that they're put together with Zach LaVine, who I think is still one of the most underrated players in the NBA.
He's an all-star.
Nikola Vucevic.
All-star.
And the way he can shoot and play offensively. And even DeMar DeRozan and Lonzo Ball. They're more ready to be more competitive on a night where they have 75% of what they can do going versus the Charlotte Hornets. I would also say different timetables. The Bulls' timetable got incredibly expedited the second Nikola Vucevic got traded for last year. And that was showcased by the contract they gave DeMar DeRozan, the contract they gave Lonzo Ball. Mm-hmm. They were rebuilding until they traded for Nikola Vucevic, and then they also went out and hammered it home even farther with those moves.
Brought in Caruso this offseason.
So whether we're talking about on an individual nightly basis, like last night where the Bulls were the better team, or long term, they're on different wavelengths. That is one way to do it. But I actually am going to commend Mitch Kupchak and James Borrego for not trying to force things. Atlanta did a great job of getting guys to play well around Trae Young, Danilo Gallinari, Bogdanovich.
Well, they went and paid for it. The year before that, they traded for Capella.
So I can give them kudos for that. What I would also say is they've got one superstar and a bunch of really good players. I look at the Bulls. I don't think DeMar DeRozan is the second best player on a championship team. He's a really nice player.
He's not the second best player on that team.
Nikola Vucevic. I don't know he's the second best player on a championship team. I think LaVine is an absolute stud and, again, underrated.
I think Vucevic is the best player on that team.
But I look at the Bulls and the Hawks, and I look at both teams in the same way. Have they gone out there and fast-forwarded their timeline? Yes. Are they really good teams? Yes. But I think both teams have a similar ceiling. I think both teams' ceiling is the Eastern Conference Finals game. Yeah, I don't want that to be the ceiling of the Hornets long term.
That is the ceiling.
Well, no, but the point is, like, the Bulls used all of their assets to get where they are.
Because they were tired of losing.
Well, but they don't have assets beyond that to add the next player that can get you to be a championship team. The Atlanta Hawks, they have their own first rounders, but like, they don't have a lot of cap space when a free agent gets out there.
So let me get this
straight. So they have capped themselves, whereas the Charlotte Hornets are allowing this, allowing LaMelo to develop, allowing Miles to develop, allowing PJ to develop. They're allowing their guys to develop. And, oh, by the way, they're doing that and still being a top six seed in the Eastern Conference as of this moment.
I don't understand this, Nick.
Should I say it in Latin?
No. I heard the words that came out of your mouth since this is Rush Hour 4. The bottom line is this. When you're not good historically at basketball and you have a chance to improve your franchise and make it to a conference finals, which in the two examples in Atlanta and Chicago currently 2 in the East, Hawks coming off an Eastern Conference Finals berth last season, currently at 10. Yeah. Now, do you have to be prudent at the same time to the best of your ability? But those two markets, and Atlanta would push back on this, but let's call it what it is. Those two markets have a history of having more players, more guys that can get you to those moments than Charlotte previously has.
So then, but my question is, why? It feels like you're saying, well, we're not the Bulls, so we're bleep.
No, no one said that, and you know I'm not saying that. Well, this is a rebuild, right? Mm-hmm. James Borrego, or some people say it's a build. James Borrego is building. Okay, I don't have an issue with that. They've done some very prudent things. They've done some things I disagree with. Mitch Kupchak, James Borrego era. They're ascending. I'm okay with that. But same rules I have for the Carolina Panthers. While you're ascending or while you're building, I reserve the right to evaluate you based on your peers. Mm-hmm. The Knicks have been terrible. They passed the Hornets last year. The Hawks were terrible. They passed the Hornets last year. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have been bad. They passed the Hornets last year. It's okay to say, hey, we're pacing well, but teams around us are pacing better.
But I think my greater point is, I think the Bulls, and I certainly think the Knicks, who just benched Kemba Walker, by the way, that's rough, because he doesn't play defense because he's a small guard. Mm-hmm. I think that passing is momentary. I think what's most important here, I really do think that even as they are currently constructed right now, if they never make another move, I think within the next 3 years, the Charlotte Hornets will be in the Eastern Conference final game. because they have shown. I gave you your time to get it out here.
I'm asking you to think about what you're saying. I just want to make sure what you're saying is what you really want to say.
Yeah, I've said it before. I understand full well what I'm saying. They have all the talent you need to be really, really competitive.
They're competitive
and
now.
Correct. And to continue as LaMelo develops. LaMelo's not been consistent this year. He's been great, but he has not been from one game to the next. Yeah. The defense has been up and down. Even his offense has been up and down. As he gets more consistent, the Hornets' ceiling and floor goes up. Because the Hornets have a great ceiling already with the guys they have on the roster, right? They have probably an Eastern Conference Finals ceiling, but the floor is anywhere from a top six seed to a team that is going to be back in the play-in next year. Allow me to get through. So the point is, I understand that there's been a lot of bad basketball here. The Hornets are on the right trajectory, all right? And I still feel long-term, the thing that's going to separate whether they're going to be a championship team or not is how good can LaMelo be, and can you bring in another bona fide superstar via a trade at some point to pair with him alongside the other guys you have. That's going to be the difference, not, should we rush to sign DeMar DeRozan, because that's not too dissimilar to what they did with Gordon Hayward.
So we see this Hornets team very different. This Hornets team is not an Eastern Conference final ceiling to me.
I didn't say they were today.
Yeah, this Hornets team today is a team that could win, given the right matchup, a playoff series. I do not think they would win a playoff series versus Chicago specifically, even if Plumlee and Cody Martin were on the floor. Chicago's a better team. We know late in the year, it's not a surprise. The more talented teams advance. That's the NBA, especially when it's veteran talent. I'm not going to dispute that the Hornets are tracking right. But the rules of the NBA maintain the same. LaMelo could develop. He's a star. He could develop into superstar status. Terry is about at his ceiling, and that's okay. If he can hold right here for another four seasons to get through this contract, cool. Gordon, we've seen the best of Gordon. I'm okay with that, too. That's what they chose. They knew that that's possible. Okay, fine. We're banking on something that this market has not seen. We've yet to see a player in free agency come to this market on the level of what Vucevic is in Chicago. What Zach LaVine, and that wasn't a free agent standpoint, that was a trade, which is what you'll say, trade. We haven't seen this organization be able to trade for players of that magnitude. Mm-hmm. I'm not bleeping on Mitch and James Borrego.
Borrego is a great nickname for him, by the way. Just shorten it.
I'm just simply saying, based on where we are right now, and I said this to you coming out of the draft, I mentioned this on these airways coming out of free agency, the Hornets are going the right way, but the teams around us, their rosters surpassed us. Now, Kelly's been better than I thought. Kelly Oubre Jr. has been fantastic.
I think you underestimate the growth and development, and because that's really where they are. They will get to a point. The eventuality, you and I are talking about the eventual point where the ultimate make or break with this organization will be, can LaMelo, if we're being fair, can LaMelo entice somebody to agree to being traded here, to force their way here.
Sure.
Now, that will be the ultimate break-even point.
Or can they go get somebody in the open market?
But the point to get to there is to continue what they've doing.
So
the idea that they have players who are better than their players now is not my concern.
Well, it's my concern.
My concern is in another, math is hard, 59 games, where's Miles going to be? Because Miles has been pretty inconsistent here recently, too. Where is LaMelo going to be?
Okay.
And by the way, PJ, McDaniels, Kai Jones, James Bouknight.
How long?
These are all guys. What I think people are trying to do, and I think you have done this a little bit as well, people are trying to prematurely cap when the Hornets have to be. And I get the idea of setting benchmarks. My benchmark for this year, be a top six seed, win a playoff game.
That's win a playoff series.
No. Win a playoff game. Have not won a playoff game since when?
No, they haven't won a playoff series.
Oh, no,
Kemba,
I know.
Kemba won a playoff game.
Yes, yes.
They haven't won a series.
Let's get back to the previous best that we had with Kemba Walker winning, and then anything above and beyond that this year is gravy to me.
My goal for this season, top six seed, win a playoff series. Then we can be thinking about conference finals, multiple series, and all of that. What I'm saying to you is I think you have a healthy...
It's the only thing on me that's healthy.
Optimism about what the future is. I look at the now. I want basketball, and it's fantastic being in Spectrum Center. And I love the energy around this team. And I have Spectrum specifically so I can watch this team and not have to deal with the streaming BS. But I've seen teams like New Orleans and Sacramento and Orlando and Detroit try and ride that wave of what you're talking about.
They're already in a better position than New Orleans is with Zion. They're already better in a better position than Orlando has been in their past few years, even with Vucevic.
You're missing my point. The Hornets' ceiling is about Melo's development, and they still have not proven. You got to go get mega dudes, multi-time all-stars. We don't have that yet.
Yeah. And
banking because, that's going to happen.
No. I'm banking that if you continue on this trajectory,
there's no guarantee that's going to happen.
Yeah, there are no guarantees in the NBA. This is called being a small market team. So, and by the way, I can't say to them, oh, well, hey, Chicago, oh, because I didn't want DeMar DeRozan. Quite frankly, I would not have been okay with what they gave up for Vucevic.
You wouldn't have been okay with Nikola Vucevic being here.
Not with a 31-year-old center who is limited athletically.
What?
No. Look, they gave up two first rounders and a bunch of young players.
So would you give up Book Knight and Kai Jones right now for Vooch?
No.
Oh my God.
No. I would do it for Karl Anthony Towns.
Nick,
I would do it
this.
For a bona fide. No. I think you're in the minority here, not I. By the way, we want to congratulate John Bridges for winning two tickets to Saturday's ACC game, a championship game at Bank of America Stadium. Stay tuned for more giveaways today and throughout the week here on WFNZ. We've got a big breaking piece of news in college football, and the hits just keep on coming for the Carolina Panthers. That's next on Sports Radio FNZ. Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. Bit of news to pass along from the world of the ACC. Virginia Tech has a new head coach, and it is Penn State defensive coordinator Brent Pry.
Okay. I think, did he play at Tech, or he used to be an assistant at Tech or something? He played college football for the Buffalo.
He was a GA at Virginia Tech from 95 to 97. And his name is Brent Pry.
So he also had stops Western Carolina, Memphis, D-line coach, Georgia Southern defensive coordinator, Vandy associate head coach, Penn State associate head coach, D.C., and then this year, from 2016 to 2021, he's just been the D.C. linebacker coach.
I'm sure Bailey will have the definitive take on this coming up at 2.
He'd be a guy I'd trust on something like that.
This one just strikes me as underwhelming. He's a really good defensive coordinator. Get me wrong. He's a top-notch defensive coordinator. Good on Brent Pry for getting this job.
51 years old.
He absolutely could be a good coach. But look at some of the names that are out there. Dave Clawson, who I know just signed the extension at Wake Forest. Yeah. Dave Clawson has been a name that people have talked about. Will Healy, Jamie Chadwell. Obviously, Billy Napier ended up in Florida, so that didn't work out.
Bill O'Brien was a name that was out there. Bailey and I specifically discussed Bill O'Brien.
So I had heard Brent Pry might be the guy. I think Bailey's going to have the definitive take on this coming up in about an hour and a half. 2 hours and a half. Math is tough for me. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, this just feels like an underwhelming hire. Good luck to Coach Pry.
Hey. Coach Pry, welcome to the ACC.
Feels like a great hire for a group of five school to make. Feels like a good SMU hire.
I can just tell you, Bronco Mendenhall and our UVA Cavaliers, respectfully, are not currently shaking in our whatever it is people say that we wear.
It probably doesn't help that LSU just hired Brian Kelly. And a day before that, Lincoln Riley got $110 million to go to L.A.
So when you compare it, like, it just doesn't – being Power 5 to Power 5 job just on the scale, it doesn't do much.
It's more that they hired a first-time head coach. And people will say, well, Justin Fuente had been a head coach at Memphis.
They've been down this road
before. But I think the problem is trying to make every group of five hire the same thing, I think, is a mistake. I'll be honest. I think I would have rather Shade Beamer over Brent Pry. At least he's done it for a year. But again, we'll find out. I could look like a moron very quickly. That has happened before. Please see LaMelo Ball. In the meantime, as that is the latest. Brent Pry, the new head coach of the Virginia Tech Hokie football program. The hits just keep on coming for the Carolina Panthers. Yesterday, we found out that Christian McCaffrey would be on the IR, done for the rest of the season. Well, now we got Panthers cornerback Dante Jackson is heading to the injured reserve. This is really, and by the way, the Panthers have activated Deontay Brown.
I asked about him yesterday.
Off the IR. And the good thing about that is now they cannot play Deontay Brown once again. But the downside, like, I hate this for Dante Jackson.
Yeah.
And listen, Dante's going to get paid this offseason.
Yes.
Dante is going to go cornerbacks that can play the way he's played this year and even last year.
And the way he tackled.
And the way he's tackled. Those dudes get paid in free agency. So I don't take it for granted that we could have seen the last of Dante Jackson in this town. So on one level, good for Dante going into your free agent year that you've put the good tape out there and you've been one of the best parts of the Carolina Panthers. On the other hand, good God, this sucks. And I know they could get J.C. Horn back in the near future. They've got Stephon Gilmore, who they refuse to play for 100% of the snaps. A.J. Bouye has been very good. I don't think this injury is going to be a death knell for this team defensively, but man, this sucks.
Draft pick Keith Taylor Jr. has been, I thought, really good. He has some of the length, the man cover attributes that Scott Fitterer and Matt Rhule and Phil Snow desire. Rashawn Melvin has had moments that
CJ Henderson,
that he's been all right. This is where having that CJ Henderson buffer along with Stephon Gilmore, this is where that I don't want to see J.C. Horn for the rest of this year. Dante Jackson, team captain for the first time. Two interceptions this season. He has 12 picks in four seasons, the most of any player out of the 2018 draft class. That's why he's going to get paid. He proved he could be tough, proved he could play through injury last year, got healthy this year, played through the turf toe, and here we are. Listen, this is about, and this isn't the last one. They're shutting it down over there. This isn't the last one. It doesn't surprise me. Now, I didn't think it would be literally the next day.
Can you clarify?
Shut it down!
Can you clarify who they is? Is this Matt Rhule? Is this the players? Who is they?
I think it's a combination of both. I could see, I'm not reporting this. This is just my opinion. You and I operate in the opinion space. My opinion is Dante looked around at what was going on. I can't get P.J. Walker's comments from the game Sunday out of my head. He said, yeah, there were several points on the sideline that it was just flat. I don't believe dudes are fully bought in over there. So when you got McCaffrey and dudes see, whether it was the owner, the man, the GM, the head coach, or the player, dudes like, we don't have C-Mac. That offensive line looks like that. Yeah, I got money on the line. I'm not going out here and kill myself.
If this is them shutting it down, if this truly is, if this is Dante Jackson saying, I can't fight for this coaching staff anymore, love the guys personally, but yeah, we're not going where I want to go, mm-hmm. Then we have gone from the Panthers organization being all in, which is what the Stephon Gilmore move was, which is not necessarily what the C.J. Henderson move was, but to be fair, the Cam Newton move was about salvaging the season and keeping you in the playoff hunt. If we've gone from let's salvage the season and we don't want to waste this defense with Cam Newton 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now technically, if we've gone from there to shut it down territory, I don't know how to say it any other way. That's a real indictment on what's going on there at Bank of America Stadium.
Listen, again, this is you and I operating in the opinion space. Clearly, this is not a report from anybody on the interior. I haven't spoken with anybody specifically about Dante or CMC that represents the Panthers.
They've not spoken with us on air.
So this is speculation and grandeur. But the bottom line is this. Dante fought through a turf toe all last year. I find it interesting that you get a groin that's not torn. He's got a hurt groin. And you're shutting it down. Same rules apply, said to Christian McCaffrey. You haven't even gotten through the bye week. You haven't even gotten back in the facility the Monday after having a week off to evaluate how you feel. Y'all are making that determination now?
All right, the real question, are they finally going to start playing Stephon Gilmore 100% of the snaps?
Now they're in a situation where they don't have a choice.
I don't know. I mean, I think
100% probably not.
So What I will say is, if they continue to kind of put him where he is right now, then it's going to be more on what you're saying, which is this is absolutely we're going to shut it down, but we don't want to shut everybody down because then we're going to go all the way in the tank. They're going to try and play that.
Now, careful. Gilmore has been battling a lower extremity injury of his own. He's dealing with a groin himself. So I'm wondering, because he's on a deal. He's unrestricted at the end of this year.
If it's tomorrow, I'm tapping out for the rest of the bye week.
How they manage Gilmore will tell me what they really trying to do on that side of the ball moving forward.
I'm still more concerned about the loss of Christian McCaffrey than I am Dante.
Of course.
Part of it is the depth. Part of it is they have shown that they can juggle big losses in the secondary and still be successful. Without Christian McCaffrey, the play calling, it's just not been great. 704-570-9610. So Dante Jackson on the IR, presumably done for the rest of the season. Deonte Brown, rookie guard, off the IR. And oh, by the way, Christian McCaffrey was put on the IR yesterday. Which loss is going to hamper the Panthers more down the stretch? I think we also want to know, do you think the Carolina Panthers are, in the words of John Taffer and Nick Wilson, shutting it down? Rod Boone of the Charlotte Observer will ask his thoughts on the state of the Charlotte Hornets after another devastating loss, this one to the Chicago Bulls in Chicago last night. That's next on Sports Radio FNC.